They were once at the pinnacle of power and privilege. Now some of Britain's most famous royals are frozen out, publicly diminished, privately constrained. From Virginia Giuffre's posthumous memoir targeting Prince Andrew to Harry and Meghan's Hollywood reinvention, the stories of exile and scandal and control continue to fascinate. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Now, what is going to make Virginia Giuffre's upcoming memoir, Nobody's Girl, so potentially damaging for the royal family?
He knows what happened. I know what happened. And there's only one of us telling the truth. And I know that's me.
Could her words, published after her tragic death, of course, reignite public and reputational scrutiny, even if the law remains silent?
This is not some sordid sex story. This is a story of being trafficked.
And what do Andrew Lowney's revelations about Prince Andrew tell us about the royal and his life now in social exile?
I think the thing with Andrew is you can't believe a word he says.
Meanwhile, Meghan Markle is back on Netflix for Series 2 as she's sharing intimate insights into her life as a former working royal, talking about the cost of separation from her two children and the pressure of a life under scrutiny.
Even though I wasn't seeing it, you could feel the energy of it. So you feel a lot of pressure to go, is this hair out of place? I bet it is. But I'm okay with it. Is someone going to say something about anything? Probably. Once you make peace with the fact that they're going to say something about anything, then that's a hard place to get where you can make peace with that.
Well, with me today to unpick all of that and so much more is veteran royal reporter Richard Palmer, who has covered the royal family for decades. Richard, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you.
When I list out all of the issues within the royal family there, they really are contending with quite a lot of negativity at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah, there is quite a lot of negativity around them at the moment. I mean, you know, deal a lot with the palace and they always want to focus on the official engagements of the royal family, their official work. But far more interesting stories really are around the people who've just quit, you know, or been forced to quit royal life and are trying to make money. Have been trying to make money on the side, and the various scandals around them, I think.
And let's go to that memoir, Nobody's Girl, which is going to be published again in October, and it'll really give the last word to Virginia Giuffre on her trafficking ordeal. What makes this release so potentially explosive for the royal family?
It exposes Prince Andrew again to some very damaging allegations. It's difficult for him. You know, he can't really answer back to a dead woman, can he? The whole story is so tragic. And will we ever get to the bottom of it all? I mean, of course, Virginia Giuffre, Epstein, Andrew, Trump is now in there as well. You've got Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, or so many powerful people who are wrapped up in that story. You know, inevitably it will feed conspiracy theories about cover-ups, etc. And for the royal family, it's just a nightmare that never goes away.
And as you say, it's highly unlikely that the prince is ever going to address the relationship that he had with Virginia Giuffre or indeed Epstein ever again, given the damage that was done by that Newsnight interview.
Well, yes. I mean, of course, he denies ever meeting her, or he says he has no recollection of ever meeting her.
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady. None whatsoever.
You don't remember meeting her?
No. I don't remember meeting her at all. I do not remember a photograph being taken. And I've said consistently and frequently that we never had any sort of sexual contact whatever.
And, you know, it's interesting to see, of course, that Ghislaine Maxwell is the other element I suppose we should mention. You know, she's locked up in prison, gave an interview to the authorities where she was essentially saying that she never saw Donald Trump doing anything wrong, but also claiming that that photo of Virginia Giuffre with Prince Andrew with his arm around her, apparently taken at her apartment in Belgravia in London, when she came over when she was 17, she says that is a fake. But I think it's been well established forensically that it isn't a fake. So you can't really trust what she's saying, I think. Andrew, as you say, learnt a very bitter lesson that in trying to defend himself, he only made things worse. And I suspect he will just have to remain silent about this. On Andrew, you know, it's clear that the palace has tried to distance itself from what he was doing back then. But there's also another element to it, which has been covered in Andrew Loney's book, which is the allegation and, you know, a fair amount of evidence to support it, that while he was going on British taxpayer-funded trips abroad as a trade envoy, he was actually drumming up business for himself and his mates on the side, you know, in breach of the sort of rules of royal travel. Had he been a government minister, I think he would have been forced to step down many years before he actually did.
Those allegations are contained in this book entitled, which has been written by Andrew Loney, about Prince Andrew. He says that he's interviewed 300 sources giving their accounts. They paint a picture of him as this spoilt, lazy, cruel individual. Was that your impression of him? And is that the impression you think that a lot of those who covered the royal family over the years would have?
You know, I don't profess to know him that well, I have to say. I mean, you can spend 20-odd years covering the royal family, never really get to know them that well. They keep their distance. But you can get an idea, and certainly there are plenty of people who say that he was, as you're suggesting really, spoiled, indulged by his mother, and thought he could do what he liked. You know, I spoke to somebody who worked quite closely with him for a few years. He felt that people who worked for the royal family needed to do more to try to keep them in place, really, to try to regulate their behaviour. And was talking about, this person was talking about Andrew had been brought up, and he was second in line to the throne when he was younger. And yeah, he just thought he could do anything he wanted. And I went to Andrew Loney's book launch, and it was staggering to see the number of former diplomats and other sort of establishment figures who were there, who just all had enough of Andrew and really want to see some sort of British government inquiry, parliamentary inquiry into his behaviour.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a financial scandal is the real scandal here, not the sexual scandal. Though I talked to one diplomat and the private secretary had said, by the way, Andrew likes blondes. He likes some blondes provided for him. And the diplomat said, I'm a diplomat. I'm not a pimp. And I think, you know, what I'm hoping is there was, I mean, you were in Parliament, I think, at the time, there was a plan to have a royal register, to register royal interests. I think that would involve, I mean, clearly it was up to what they declared, but I think that would be something. And I think we just need to have more transparency from the royals about what they're doing.
And it's plain to see that the powers that be, that they just don't want to go there. It will open up such a can of worms. I think that they just want to bury it.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the early life nicknames he had. Baby Grumpling, Tiresome Little Shit. They say that he dismissed a lackey at one stage for having a mole on his face. Another worker in the palace was dismissed for wearing a nylon tie at a dinner party. He sniffed a pâté as a first course and then turned to the guest, a female beside him, and said, "This pâté smells. What do you think?" And when she went to smell it, he stuffed the pâté into her face and thought it was hilarious, and nobody really laughed at his joke. There seems to be this thread of gratuitous cruelty throughout his life and the way that he interacts and behaves around people. But to that more serious point, that he somehow abused his position of power and abused his position as being a royal to ingratiate himself with other people and to, I suppose, earn money for himself, what are the chances of that being investigated further? And how damaging is all of this to Prince Andrew?
I think it's really damaging. I don't see any sign at the moment of anybody wanting to investigate it. I mean, we have rules in Parliament that make it difficult for MPs and peers to debate widely the behaviour of the royal family. And I sort of understand the reasoning behind that, because otherwise people could be using them to make cheap points all the time, party political points. But there does come a time when, you know, you say this is a scandal and we need to get to the bottom of this. The most obvious place to start is the Commons Public Accounts Committee, because they do have the authority to look at the royal family's use of public money. We had a spell where successive chairs of that committee were quite keen to hold the royal family to account. And then, well, I would say that they lost their appetite a bit when we had that scandal over MPs' expenses. What I was going to say about Andrew as well is, though, I should paint the other side. The one hears from his friends. They paint a picture of somebody who's intensely loyal. Intensely loyal to his brother as well, actually. And that although there clearly have been differences over what money he might be able to get from his brother and whether he should stay at Royal Lodge, his 30-room home in Windsor, his friends say they've never heard him criticise the king, or before that, the queen. You hear stories of people saying, well, I went to him and said I was trying to raise £1 million for a charity. And he said, I'll help you with that. And within 24 or 48 hours, he'd gone round some of his wealthy friends and raised that money for that particular charity. So, you know, nobody's entirely bad. And I think that's worth mentioning just to balance things up a bit.
Mm. You mentioned the Royal Lodge there. I mean, there are these ongoing rumours that the King, King Charles, wants him to move out of that Royal Lodge, that he is not comfortable with somebody who is essentially exiled from the royal family with no royal duties anymore, living in this, as you say, home with his ex-wife. But he's not for moving, which shows you, I suppose, the certain stubborn streak that the man has.
Yes, but of course, and the whole furore over that has raised the question, well, how can you afford to stay there then? How's he earning his money? And we've never really quite got to the bottom of that. But I think that has helped produce stories about, for example, his relationship with an alleged Chinese spy and how he was earning money from his Pitchett Palace events. He can stay there if he can afford to stay. The king's got no power to remove him because it's a property that's owned by the Crown Estate, which is entirely independent. In spite of the name, it's not really anything much to do with the king. I mean, it's his in name, but in name only. He doesn't get any money from it. It does look as if Andrew's going to stay there. And of course, that house was allegedly being lined up for William and Kate, but they've now found another property in Windsor that's owned by the Crown Estate that they're going to move into.
I mean, there is another person, of course, who features heavily in this book and who also, it appears, is deserving of the title Entitled, and that's Sarah Ferguson, his ex-wife. I mean, the book talks at length about her character or lack of character, and really, if Andrew is obsessed with sort of sex and power, she's obsessed with sex and money.
That's the picture that's portrayed, yes. Again, you will hear people who will enthuse about Fergie and about her charity work, etc. But there's a big question mark over her behaviour over many years, I think. And, you know, I think you can go back to that famous News of the World story where Mazen Mahmood, the fake sheikh, enticed her into agreeing to introduce him to Prince Andrew in return for, I think it was £500,000, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, $700,000, I think, was the money on the table for her to open the doors, I think she put it, to Prince Andrew and the royal family. Yikes.
Yes, so you've got those allegations that for many years she has been living off being her connection with Prince Andrew. They still live in the same house at opposite ends of the house, but they're still very close. So yes, I mean, she doesn't come out of this very well either.
There is one person who was quoted, I think, the Queen's press secretary back in the day, said that at one time she was seen as the greatest single threat to the monarchy in the late 1980s because of her scandals, the controversy, the humiliation that she brought on to the royal family. I still remember, when I was only 10 years of age, those photographs in the tabloids in the UK of her on holidays in France with her boyfriend at the time and her feet being sucked. Do you recall those? I mean, does anybody from who lived through the 90s, does anybody not recall those? I can see those pictures vividly.
It was her financial advisor, we were told. Yes, and interestingly, 15 years ago, 20 years ago maybe, people who worked for the royal family were telling me that those pictures should not have been published. I think it's probably fair to say that we'd struggle to see those pictures in newspapers and magazines these days.
Yeah, it was a gross breach of privacy. What is Prince Andrew's life like now as a royal in exile? How does he spend his days?
If you believe some accounts, he's an isolated figure who's holed up at home, watching golf videos and films, and very frustrated. I've done a couple of profiles of him in the last year, spoken to people close to him, and they painted quite a different picture of somebody who was enjoying spending time with the family. The very elegant salon at the centre of the downstairs, I was told, was piled up with children's toys. And so I think he's spending a lot of time with his grandchildren. He goes out playing golf. He goes out with friends for dinner in London and locally in near Windsor. Cowith Park Hotel is one place he goes quite a lot. So he is getting about. He's, I'm not sure we should feel that sorry for him. I think he's having a reasonable life.
His reputation is obviously in tatters after the revelations from Virginia Giuffre, and I can't imagine this book has done anything to rehabilitate him. The other prominent royal that is frozen out or exiled are, of course, Harry and Meghan, in part through their own choice, it has to be said. Meghan Markle is back on Netflix again with season two of With Love, Meghan. Did you watch the first season? Are you a fan, Richard?
I didn't watch the whole of the first season, I have to confess. I watched little bits.
Yeah, no judgment from this quarters for that position.
I watched the entire second series last weekend. I was fortunate to get a preview. And I have to say that after about 20 minutes of watching the first episode, I wanted to gouge my eyes out.
Oh, and took 20 minutes to get to that point. I think I got about 3 minutes in the first series and had to switch off.
We're going to do water marbling, which is a really cool and kind of, I'm not going to say easy, but easier than it seems process. Christina loves a beautiful headscarf. I love them too. And I think, though I haven't done it before, my gosh, to be able to use scarves like this as a pocket square for the fellas, for her hair, and even if he wanted to do great gift wrap, awesome.
But then, as I don't know if it's like a version of Stockholm Syndrome or something where you end up sympathizing with the people who are holding you prisoner, I had to do it for work. I had to watch it. And I have to say, I warmed to her and I warmed to the format of the show. And I quite enjoyed it in the end. I mean, it's not a deep assessment of the meaning of life and philosophy or whatever. It's very light and fluffy. I enjoyed some of the episodes. You know, there was enough in it to interest people who are fans of Harry and Meghan and people who are fans of lifestyle shows. But if not, if you're not either of those, then I'd probably advise you to stay away from it.
Yeah, she admitted feeling inauthentic while on official duty, doing things like having to wear nude-coloured tights. Now, I feel there's a whole lot of that programme that feels a little inauthentic too, to be honest. But there are some reviewers of that series who are saying she speaks more fondly of her time in the UK than she has in the past. Do you get any sense from them that they are looking to make any kind of return to the royal family?
No, I don't get any sense of that, really. But that was what struck me, was that she seemed to have put some distance between the whole trauma of their exit and where they are now. And she was able to talk fondly of missing British radio stations and when she and Harry were falling in love and everything. And I thought that was interesting. But she then, I think, made a mistake by giving that interview to Bloomberg, which really mixed up the messages. And there she was going back into her frustrations of royal life, how unhappy she was working with the royal family. She'd actually steered clear of anything to do with the royal family. I thought it was showing signs of her moving on. And then I think a mistake to do that interview and go back into all the problems she experienced as a working royal.
I think probably it was different several years ago, where I couldn't be as vocal and I had renewed pantyhose all the time. Let's be honest, that was not very myself. I hadn't seen pantyhose since movies in the 80s when they came in the little egg. That felt a little bit inauthentic, but that's a silly example. But it is an example of when you're able to dress the way you want to dress and you're able to say the things that are true and you're able to show up in the space really organically and authentically, that's being comfortable in your own skin. And that's, of course, had different chapters in my life. But right now, no, I don't feel that I need to prove anything.
So look, it's a really busy time for the royal family between these memoirs, a Netflix show and the biographies all converging at the same time. What impact do you think this is having on King Charles, on the Queen and the wider royal family?
Well, first of all, I think Prince William just sort of shuts it all out. I think he's, from what I understand, sort of stopped thinking about his brother and sister-in-law for the moment. I think it's awkward for the king because I think, you know, Harry has said he wants to reconcile with his family. And if the king is not willing to do that, then I think it starts to look a bit awkward for him.
I can't see a world in which I would be bringing my wife and children back to the UK at this point. The things that they're going to miss is, well, everything. You know, I love my country. I always have done, despite what some people in that country have done. You know, I miss the UK. I miss parts of the UK. Of course I do. And I think that it's really quite sad that I won't be able to show, you know, my children my homeland.
It's, you know, it's a running sore for the royal family, this rift. And personally, I think they need to do something to heal it. William, it may take a lot longer than the king to do anything to resolve it. And then Andrew, yeah, and Andrew is a constant headache for them. And clearly, you know, he's still going to be at family occasions. He's been up at Balmoral with them over the past few days. I mean, he missed Christmas last year because of all the controversy over the alleged Chinese spy. But no doubt he will be back next Christmas at Sandringham. So that sort of brings it all up again, and they're never going to get away from it.
Story that certainly won't go away. Richard Palmer, thanks so much for your time and joining me here today on News Talk Daily. That's it for us today, and indeed for this week. If you've missed any episodes, be sure to listen back. Search for News Talk Daily wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to give us a like or follow. So until Monday morning, from me, Ciara Doherty, have a wonderful weekend.